people say, when you do what you love, you never really work. And I gotta be honest here, I kind of disagree a little bit, because to me, it's always been the opposite. I love what I do, and therefore, I work even harder on it. The American Bar at the Savoy Hotel in London feels like home a little bit, you know? So earlier I said that day one in London, I would look for places where that would value what I do. And the American Bar is one of the first place where I went knocking, and literally just like that, I said, hi, I would love to get the chance to play here. How do I do that? I was lucky enough to find the right agent, the right people that helped me getting in there with my own show, with my own thing.
Herzlich willkommen. Mein Name ist Daniel Fürk und ich freue mich sehr, euch heute zu einer neuen Episode Gin & Talk begrüßen zu dürfen. Mein heutiger Gast ist Michael Amadi. Der Musiker, Komponist und Gründer von One Orchestra vereint in seiner Arbeit klassische Arrangements, Pop und Soul auf einzigartige Weise. Aufgewachsen in Florenz mit nigerianischen Wurzeln zog es ihn nach London, wo er seine künstlerische Heimat fand. Neben internationalen Auftritten ist die American Bar im Savoy Hotel ein fester Anker in seinem kreativen Leben, ein Ort, an dem er seit vielen Jahren regelmäßig auftritt. Ich wollte von ihm wissen, wie er seine vielseitige Arbeit zwischen Soloprojekten, Orchesterarrangements und dem Schreiben für andere Künstler meistert, was ihn inspiriert und wie er es schafft, sich in der Musikindustrie treu zu bleiben. Wenn dir diese Episode von Gin & Talk gefällt, folge uns bei Spotify, Apple Podcasts oder wo auch immer du gerne Podcasts hörst und hinterlasse uns eine gute Bewertung. Jetzt aber viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Schön, dass ihr alle wieder mit dabei seid.
Zwei Menschen, eiskalte Drinks und eine Menge Zeit für ein persönliches Bargespräch. Herzlich willkommen an unserem Bartresen. Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Gin & Talk. Mach es dir gemütlich, lehn dich zurück und tauche ein in die verrucht düstere Atmosphäre unserer Studiobar.
Michael, it's so nice to see you again right before Christmas. We are going to publish the episode after Christmas, but yeah, right before the end of the year. Welcome to Gin & Talk.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. This is lovely.
So we met not a year ago. It's more maybe 10 months ago, something like that, or 9 months ago in London, while you've been playing at the American Bar at the Savoy, which is actually one of my most favorite locations in town, because the drinks are good and of course the music is good as well.
And the music. Yeah.
And then we kind of got to know each other, and over the time we met a couple of times in London, also in Munich. So that's amazing. And of course I learned a lot about your music and what you're doing besides your gigs at the Savoy. So then I got curious, and then I was like, okay, we've got to talk. And now we are here. And yeah, and I learned you've been born in Florence. So you are Italian with Nigerian heritage. And then you moved to London to do your music there. And now you're basically traveling the world all the time.
So pretty much, yeah.
let's start from the beginning. How did you get in touch with music in the first place? So not like just listening to music, but also to get the feeling that you want to do more with music, doing your own music, playing music.
Well, I think music has always been part of my life. I started very young, when I was 5, 6. I think I was naturally drawn to it. I started with guitar, I moved then to piano. I've always been very sort of creating and felt the need to express things in a musical way. So writing music, composing, and performing as well. I think church was what kind of made me realize that music for me was kind of a thing. I was about 7, 8 years old. I was barely playing guitar, but I would literally go I would probably go to church like 3 times a week because I wanted to play all the instruments that were there, including the organ, the piano, the guitars. So yeah, it was about when I was 9 or 10 that the priest of the church was probably fed up of me like knocking the door at 7 a.m. rehearsing for the 8 a.m. mass. So he decided to give me one of the small keyboard to bring home to practice. And I think after that, there was never silence in my home again. It was always music and me kind of playing and practicing and discovering things. So that is I think that's the very beginning of how I approached music.
So if I listen to your music now, all the stuff you're doing, it's like a wild mix of pop, soul, classical instruments. So there's like a whole range of music you're working on right now. How did that come? Like, why are there so many different influences to what you're doing today, or different styles?
Well, I mean, it is a very long journey, I think, and you get kind of, you know, to explore all the different things, all the different angles. And I've started with, as I said, I started with guitar, I moved to piano, and I did my classical studies in Florence. When I moved to London, I switched to songwriting, so that was a little bit more broadened in a way. I was writing, I was composing lyrics, any sort of genre. So, you know, I've always been curious, and that's been the first thing. And then, you know, I would kind of get all those inspirations and just kind of melt them together and just try to do my own thing. So even if I wouldn't necessarily be able to play an instrument in the traditional way, in the most traditional way, I would still kind of, you know, use that to kind of explore different sounds, different genres, and basically see how you can integrate different things into what you do. So yeah, today I do a mix of things, from a classical to a lot of orchestral today, but also pop, a bit of soul. And yeah, I get to write for a lot of projects, for different artists. So, you know, that's the beauty of the whole thing. Every day it's kind of different and challenging in a different way. So, yeah.
When did you realize that you are not only good at playing music, but also are able to compose music? Because playing music is one thing, but writing music and composing music is a whole other league of working with music.
It is. I think it came very natural to me. I was composing music, I was writing songs even before I knew that that could be a job or something. Like, I was just, you know, that was my natural way of expressing things, whether it was like writing a funny song because something funny happened at school, or, funnily enough, memorizing poetry and stuff when you're in school. Like, you know, music has always been my way of kind of, in a way, dealing with things naturally. So, you know, it's just something that you start when you're young, and then, you know, like, you perform, you study, you get to listen to a lot of music. So that kind of shapes the way that you approach the instruments. And for me, it was never really like, right, we're opening a book and we're reading the music, we start reading the music and we just play the way it is. It was more like, you know, this is like a nice tool, a device that I can use to express what I want to say. So, yeah, if this answers your question. But yeah, it's always been like very natural. It's always been a natural response to coping with things. And yeah.
So at some point in time, you decided to leave one of the most beautiful cities in the world, Florence, to move to another very beautiful city, London. So why did you decide on doing that?
I mean, Florence is amazing. Florence, it's an incredible place. And I think I was lucky enough to be born and raised there. I always felt like I needed to be in a place where music was at the center of it all. And I think London obviously has a lot to offer. And I thought it was like the right moment, it was the right time to leave home and try something new in a huge place like London, where, you know, things are happening by the second every single day. And it's never ending, it never stops. So yeah, although I'm really lucky because today I get to work in Florence and Tuscany, all around Italy, to be honest, quite a lot. So I honestly feel like I'm living in between anyway, and I'm getting the, you know, the best of both. But yeah, London is definitely the place for music. That, I mean, at least for what I wanted to do, I felt I had a little bit more of an international approach and compared to the Italian music scene. So yeah, I thought London would be the right platform, the right place to be. Mm-hmm.
Was there like a certain point in time where you realized that music is not only your passion, but also a way to make your living? Because the music industry is a hard business and it's not very easy to actually live from it. And you really have to put a lot of passion and a lot of, yeah, work into it to make it work.
Yeah. I think deep down I've always knew. I remember like being a kid playing like some songs on the, learning songs on the piano and thinking, gosh, I could do this. Like I could, you know, if people would be interested in listening, I could just, you know, do this for a living. I remember thinking something like that when I was probably like 12 or 13. So it's always been there. I think gradually people start showing an interest in what I was doing. Again, I wasn't fully aware. For me, that was just cool, you know, something that you do after school, something that, you know, I finally had my keyboard and then my piano in my home. So, you know, that's it. So it's always been there. When I moved to London, I carried all of that with me. I'm like, you know, I love performing. I love sharing music with people. I love, you know, getting to play all my favorite songs as well as my original music. So at that stage, the plan was just to find an outlet that would allow me to be myself, to do that for a living. So the process was very natural. It was more like, this is who I am, this is what I do. Where are those places that would value what I can do? So yeah, all the hotels, all the restaurants, I've been working on cruise ships, every performance opportunity that would come away, I would take it just for fun, maybe just to show off a little bit when you're when you're younger. But ultimately, you know, just to kind of be myself, just to challenge myself. And yeah, again, London has a lot to offer, so it's the best place. Day one in London, I was like, right, I need to find all the piano bars, all the piano places where you can perform. Where do the artists go, you know? And I start hanging out in those circles and start making friendships.
Nice. So if we look at what you're doing today, then I discovered in my research, maybe you want to add something to that.
All right.
You're working as a solo artist and are also doing your own solo music, which can be found on Spotify and everywhere else where you can listen to music. Then you are doing solo gigs at locations like the American Bar at Savoy. Then you are doing one orchestra group, and we've got to talk about that a little bit more soon. And then you are sometimes mixing it all together and doing performances that are mixing your solo original music and one orchestra group, or you're doing original music for one orchestra group. And then, as if that wouldn't be enough, you're also writing music for other artists.
Yes.
So how is this all going together? How do you also prioritize your work schedule more or less?
Well, it's a lot. When you list it like that, it is a lot. You know, people say when you do what you love, you never really work. And I gotta be honest here, I kind of disagree a little bit, because to me, it's always been the opposite. I love what I do, and therefore I work even harder on it. And I don't mind, you know, like I've always known that whatever you do, I've always thought that whatever you do, you gotta put the hours in, you gotta work for it. And that's how you see the results. So, you know, I was down, I was game. I think it again, it all comes really naturally. I'm writing music for myself, and I realized that I've always been drawn to that orchestral sound, writing for strings, arranging for full orchestras, something that I didn't necessarily learn to do it when I was a kid, but again, curiosity got me there anyway. Experimenting first, studying it later at university, obviously the classical approach helps with all of it. So it's something that, you know, I've always been doing. So I write for myself, and I think I can write for other people, especially if they like what they hear when I write for myself. And again, it's just another way for me to be creative. Like I've always felt like I've got so much to share, so much to say musically, that, you know, there's so much that I want to do. And initially, everything doesn't really make sense, because it's a lot of different things. So growing up, it was like, okay, I'm writing this, now I'm writing for this, now I'm doing a video game, now I'm doing theater, and nothing really made sense for a while. It was just me having fun and enjoying the process of creating and seeing all the results getting better and better. So if anything, it's addictive. It's just something that, you know, I can't wait to see in the studio and see what's going to happen next, because you never know, and that's the beauty of it. I would then, you know, bring all that music. I would trying to find all this platform that would value what I do. So what if I find a place in London that would allow me to sit at the piano and just to play whatever I feel? Like I don't have to read, I don't have to, you know, prepare like a huge set list or like an entire show. For the first time, I can just sit down at the piano and just play what I like, what I feel, without fear of being judged the way that you might be judged in a classical world, where you have to perform at a certain standards every single time. You know, so all of these, again, is like kind of forming a picture of a painting where I'm doing multiple things, and I still don't know where it's going to lead, but I know that I'm enjoying it, so I'm going to keep doing it. The One Orchestra kind of glued everything together. The One Orchestra is my project, is a company where that allows me to put all of the things that I do and give them a meaning, a proper platform, and to channel in the right way to the right people, so that I can kind of carry on doing most of the things that I love musically without having to compromise. You know, I love my solo career, the music that I write for myself, but then you always get to the point where you have to choose and compromise because of branding, because of what you're saying, because of your style. So, you know, on the side, I always had all these things going on, which I didn't want to abandon. So One Orchestra allows me to write for a multitude of projects, from music for media, music for different artists, orchestra. We've accompanied artists on tour, so lending then my string section, my orchestra section, to different artists to do their thing and follow their journey creatively. So doing creative directions for them. It's a lot. It's a lot of hours, but, you know, it is my passion. It is what it feels like I'm here to do it. I can't recall a day where I actually chose, okay, I'm going to do this. I've literally just show up and kept doing what I love. So yeah, here we are, years later, London, Florence, Munich, you know, and it's beautiful.
So whenever I talk to creative people, I'm always interested in learning more about their creative process when working on creative projects. What sources of inspiration are you using, and how is that process actually looking like? Is it like you've got a certain day and you know you've got to write something, you've got to compose something, or is it more like there is an idea kind of flying to your mind and then you're just starting to scribble it down and sit down on another day and do a whole thing out of it?
The creative process is always, it's a mess. First of all, it's a lot to kind of unfold and learn. It's always different. It's one of those things that you kind of have to analyze and study a little bit and learn how to use it, learn like the right process for you, if it makes sense, because it's, you know, different for everyone. For me, and it evolves over time. It's not always the same. Well, so when I first arrived in London, I went to university, and the songwriting course that I did, they were asking us to write 3-4 songs a week. And this would be mainly for, you know, exercises. And then you start like joining little projects where you're starting having deadlines and you're working in teams. So you generally just kind of, you know, you're just in a room with people surrounded by instruments and you just, you know, you just write. That's the best way to do it. You just kind of, you know, take it out there and see what happens. Obviously, over time, you refine the process, you learn to know yourself and how it works with you. And for me, ideas, I mean, you cannot sort of like control creativity. It kind of comes to you, right? You're going through your days and you get little ideas. You hear something, you see something, you experience something, and you're like, oh, this could be cool for a song, whether it's like a little melody, a little riff, or something you hear somebody saying, like on a, I don't know, on a side book somewhere randomly. And yeah, I would just like, you know, record those little ideas in my phone or just write them down on a piece of paper wherever I can, so that when I get into the studio, I can, you know, unfold that idea and develop it and see what it is. Today, I'm doing a lot of traveling, a lot of touring. So all of these is on the go. I would get like 3-4 ideas a day. I just write them down. I record it down. And then when I have studio time, I just work on them. And I still don't know what they're going to be. I don't know if it's going to be an idea for me or something that would work for a different project. It's just something cool. And again, being curious is what for me is essential, because I don't get to listen to all the voices in the head that says, oh, this is not good for this. Maybe you should try this instead. I feel like I'm just kind of, you know, discovering something that is already there, and it's not up to me to decide yet what is it for. So yeah, but this is what I love. Like, just sit down in the studio in front of a white canvas and just kind of being inspired. And I do this literally every day. I try at least to do it every day. And that's how I stay busy. A lot of projects, a lot of things that I'm working on simultaneously. So, you know, allowing that creativity to come and to kind of take in shape. It's essential. It's what I love doing every single day.
So as I said in the beginning, we met at the American Bar at the Savoy, and I've seen you playing there a couple of times, even before we knew each other. I found some old videos on my phone, which I recorded a couple of years ago already. So I really love that place. It's one of the best bars in the world, basically. The drinks are amazing and the music as well, of course. And I always had the feeling that this place is also something very special to you. Like, it has a certain place in your heart as well. And it's not just like work, but it's a little bit more so.
Yeah.
What does this place mean to you?
The American Bar at the Savoy Hotel in London feels like home a little bit, you know? So earlier I said that day one in London, I would look for places where that would value what I do. And the American Bar is one of the first place where I went knocking and and literally just like that, I said, hi, I would love to get the chance to play here. How do I do that? I was lucky enough to find the right agent, the right people that helped me getting in there with my own show, with my own thing. And yeah, it felt right from the beginning, to be honest. I remember thinking, yeah, this might be like a little, you know, part-time job that I do while studying, and, you know, who knows what the next thing will be. But I'm loving it, you know. It's just like a place where I can go. I've been there now for six, seven years, probably more. and yeah, you know, I get to play my own music. I get to play my favorite songs, and it's an amazing feeling having a place where you literally can just, like, for me, it's literally relaxing. It's unwinding. Like, after a long day, if in the evening I get to go in American Bar and playing a show, it's just, you know, is what I would naturally do as a kid. After school, I would, you know, I would sit at the piano and learn to play the songs. So I'm kind of doing the same thing. So I'm incredibly grateful for having that platform to keep doing that.
Would you say that, especially for a musician doing such a wide range of things like you are, is it important to have a home base like that, like a place that is like a steady component in everything you're doing?
Yes, I think it is. I think it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical place, especially because it gets hard, you know, like when you get into touring seasons, it can get quite tricky. You're literally in a different city almost every day or every week, and there's a lot of things coming at you, and you know, it's a lot to handle. So it is good to have like a physical place, but for an artist, I think it could be a little bit more of a mindset thing, you know, when you have that mindset that allows you to kind of feel safe, protecting your creativity, protecting who you are as an artist, no matter where you are, it's what kind of keeps you going sometimes. You know, like, again, there's a lot of things happening. You're in a new place, you're meeting new people, you're playing on a new stage, and then there's the adrenaline, the anticipation, you're exhausted, you're traveling. At least for me, when I sit at the piano, you know, everything else around kind of disappears for a second, and I'm just like, okay, I know this place. This is my safe space. So yeah, the American Bar is my physical sort of, you know, home base. But then again, I'm lucky. I get to share my music in a lot of places and to travel a lot. So recreate that American Bar feeling of being at home and being comfortable, it's what I do no matter where I am. So yeah, it's more like a mindset thing for me.
And you also found your very, I would say, special way in interacting with your audience at the American Bar, because maybe for listeners who haven't been there yet, the Savoy is basically one of the best hotels in London, and it has one of the best bars in the world. And of course, it's a bit of a posh place. And you've got a very international audience. People from all over the world are coming there. And you kind of found a very, I would say, professional, passionate way of interacting with your audience.
Yeah.
Was that a challenge in the beginning to kind of find the right way of dealing with the audience in a place like that?
Well, I mean, you learn, at least when I joined at the beginning, it's a new environment. And I happen to be right in the center, at the center of the room. So I can't, you know, just kind of quietly analyze it and see what's going on. It's a learning curve. Again, music was the safe space. So music was like the key that would allow me to get in. So I've always felt safe with that. It doesn't matter where you are sometimes. That's what I think when I'm about to perform somewhere new, somewhere where I don't know the audience very well. Bottom line, people want to enjoy the music. People would, hopefully, they would connect with some of the, you know, classics, well-known songs that we all love. So that's the bottom line. That's a safety net. It's all about music eventually. Like, as much as we all have like our own artist ego, which can be used in a good way, is not necessarily a bad thing. But sometimes I really kind of like to step back and remind myself that it's all about the music. So it was very interesting for me actually to learn that, you know, you feel a little bit intimidated at the beginning. You are in such an iconic, amazing place, but then people respond to it in sort of the same way as I've seen in different places. And suddenly you realize that, you know, maybe, you know, this could work. I'm not like, I don't feel like necessarily out of place. Like, it's music bringing me here. So, you know, hopefully people will value and will understand that, you know, I'm trying to say something, and I'm just here out of passion, enjoying the music that I'm playing as well. It's not that showing off anymore that you've got as a kid when you're learning. So, you know, it was a natural process. I got to learn the place, the audience, and yeah. It's been a beautiful journey, to be honest. Like, this is taking me back. The first time I was in American Bar, I was a little bit scared though. You know, you never know. You're in the middle of the room on your own playing music. You hope people would like it and that they can enjoy it and that you're good for the, you know, you're good enough to play in one of the most famous bar in the city, in the world. And yeah, it's been 7 years now, so I think we've done something good.
So the year is coming to an end slowly but surely. And at this time of the year, it's always time for Spotify Wrapped, that little feature inside of Spotify where you can see what's the music you've been listening to over the past 12 months and the artists that have been your top artists and genres and so on. So if we would look at your Spotify Wrapped for this year, what kind of artists would we see in your like top five, and what kind of genres would we discover in your top five list?
Interesting question. It would probably be a mix. It would be a lot. I definitely spend a lot of time listening to calming music, especially when I get into a very high season of touring. In between, I always like to use music to unwind and to kind of collect my thoughts and get into that mindset that I was talking about earlier. So definitely like a lot of, you know, feel good, chill, sort of positive, uplifting music. But then again, it's a mix, you know, because we use music, Spotify, as a tool to get inspired, to listen to different kind of things. And so, you know, maybe I'll actually check the the app and let you know after the interview. We can do a little, a second episode.
Would be interesting. A new year is coming up now, and you did a lot of stuff this year, ever since I started following you on Instagram and kind of live watching where you're spending your time and what gigs you're playing and everything in between New York, Lisbon, London, Florence, and Munich. So there has been a lot happening this year. You also published a new original song as a solo artist, Safe and Sound. There is also an orchestra version of it, and everyone can listen to it on Spotify, of course. You did a lot of stuff with one orchestra group. There is a lot to see on YouTube on that. What's up for next year? What's on your schedule?
A lot of things. This year has been incredible. And this is the phase where I just get to kind of stop a little bit, to slow down and get to be grateful for the things that I've done. Next year is going to be similar. A lot more music for sure. A lot more collaborations, a lot more partnerships as well. We've got a very busy schedule already for 2025. And funny enough, 2026 is already shaping up, which is crazy. But yeah, so a lot of travels. I'm excited to, you know, to keep doing what I do, travel, sharing music with people, connecting with people. It's truly one of my favorite things. You've seen how music has literally led us to connect. And you never know. It's always interesting to see where music takes you. And so I'm definitely excited for 2025. Yeah, so keep following the journey because, you know, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a good one.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm definitely following and hoping to see you even more often on stage next year, and also for a couple of Negronis or other drinks. So
any time, you're always welcome.
Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, absolutely. Really looking forward to meeting you soon again.
Thank you for having me. See you soon.
Das war's leider schon. Die letzte Runde ist ausgetrunken, das Gespräch zu Ende. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Bitte nimm Rücksicht auf die Nachbarn und sei leise, wenn du die Bar verlässt. Aber vergiss auf keinen Fall, den Abonnieren-Button zu klicken. Gin and Talk ist ein Podcast von 48 Forward, produziert in den 48 Forward Studios in München.